We were indulging in some sort of spiritual gossip yesterday, talking about whether an enlightened man would still think or sleep or dream. All that is gossip. I think, where was it? I don't know if I mentioned this here or in the ashram. There is a beautiful saying in Tamil that only a snake knows its own feet. We are only guessing. You and I know only how to walk with our legs. We don't know of any other movement, any other way of moving from one place to the other, leave alone cars and so on. Independently, if we think of moving from one place to the other, we think of walking. And so we think that everything that moves must have legs and move as we move. Even so, we think that a snake also moves, and as it moves, it must also have legs. We are trying to figure out where those legs are. There may be other forms of movement. We have no idea. Other forms of motion, other forms of motive force. So only they know, only the enlightened people know whether they think or thoughts occur to them, whether they dream as you and I do, or their dreams are different from ours in quality and nature. Characteristic. Where are we? We are trying to discover what makes us live, trying to discover what makes us do, trying to discover what life is. How we behave, how we act, and we are trying to discover if it is possible for us, not for the enlightened man, for you and me, is it possible for us to free this action which is inherent in life from being linked to a future result in the future that is not here. And is it also possible to free it from volition? Sarva sankalpa sanyasi. Sankalpa can also be translated into volition. It is thought, it is notion, it is idea, and it is also volition. Is it possible for us to live free from, I will do this, I will not do this. I will do this in order to achieve that. I will do this in order to avoid that. Because it is not difficult to see at all that all these other things lead to some complication. When you say, I am going to do this so that I'll get that, a future-oriented action, then whether or not you achieve what you set out to achieve, you are in trouble. If you don't achieve what you set out to achieve, you are frustrated immediately. If you achieve what you intend to achieve, then you are distracted. Like the gambler, whether he goes to the horse race or indulges in a communication with the one-armed bandit, slot machine. Success is more dangerous there than failure. When you get success once or twice, you want to carry on. And afterwards, if you suffer a few reverses, you still think that, oh, never mind, success is again around the corner. So you go chasing after success. And as you go chasing after success, you have left far behind your own center. Way out there, caught up in this whirlpool of action, blind action, motivated action, selfish action, it becomes very difficult to regain one's foothold, because there's too much involved in that. You can't stop there. It's easy for you, as a single person, to sit down and think, all right, I don't like this sort of lifestyle, I'm going to change it drastically tomorrow morning. But if you have a family, that's not so easy. Then suddenly something else comes up. Is it not my duty to look after my husband or wife or children? And if you are head of a big business, whether it is painting or printing or yoga or wool gathering, again, the mind suggests at that time that the lives of all these people depend upon me. I am responsible for all of them. And if I walk out on this responsibility, it is sin and I'll go to hell. Once you have moved away from the center, then the whole picture is so completely and thoroughly confused that it becomes nearly impossible to regain one's foothold, to stop and to consider, am I on the right track or not? You can't stop. Except unless you are a tremendous hero. So, how not to leave this center? And regardless of success or failure, to be aware of the innate, inherent quality of the action itself. Is this right or not? Is this what should be done or not? Karyam karma. Is this what should be done or not? Regardless of the future, is this correct or not? Is it right action, correct action, appropriate action or not? Is this something which should be done? Then one can do it. In order to decide whether this should be done or not, one has to decide, determine, observe, see directly, without linking it to the past or the future, who determines this? Who wants to do this? Because unless you can come face to face with that within you which wants to do this, you cannot determine what the motive is. Unless you look at the cart, you can't look at the horse. That's the idea. Whether the cart is before the horse or horse is before the cart, doesn't matter. But unless you look at the cart, you can't look at the horse. So first look at the action itself, from where it arises. There you see the motivation. Is there a motivation there, or does this action just happen? If it just happens, it happens. And that is what is popularly called God's will. Not something which the mind creates and rationalizes as God's will, but the action that happens through others to you and through you, that is God's will. You are not keen on doing or not doing. You are not desire motivated to do this or not to do this. And in order to discover that, you have to be observe yourself. And in spite of it, the action flows. Life flows. And that is God's will. The manner in which your breakfast is being digested now is God's will. It's happening not because you want it to happen, not because it pleases you or displeases you, not because you want to grow strong or grow weak, put on weight or lose weight. Totally regardless of your own private ambitions and volition, this breakfast is being digested. That is God's will. Can our whole life be like that? Then you will know what God's will is. In other words, if your will is completely taken out of this game of life, then you will know what God's will is. That will, the private will, arises for or against a certain action. So that you cannot say that, well, this is selfish action, so I won't do it. That's also selfish. I will do this is selfish, I will not do this is selfish. Is there some way of completely defusing that self? What does one do? Can I grind my, gnash my teeth and say, no, I'm not going to be selfish hereafter? You will be demonically selfish. Because that which struggles in you is also self and leads to selfishness. So this yoga cannot be practiced by struggling.
Arurukshor mune yogam karma karanam uchyate. Yoga rodasya dasyeva shamak karanam uchyate.
One has to climb this. Gently and sweetly go up. With great inner awareness. Struggle destroys inner awareness. Whether it is called yoga asanas, pranayama, meditation or life, when there is struggle, there is no awareness. Pain for a moment or two may seem to promote awareness. You say, for instance, if someone pricks you with a pin, you develop awareness, that is, your awareness is drawn, your attention is drawn there for a moment. But from there on, it's destroyed. Because you are more worried about this pain than about becoming aware of the pain. Especially in the case of yoga asanas, pranayama, or anything, even the human relationship. Once you are hurt, the whole mind and your attention wants to avoid it. Doesn't want to do it again. If in your relation with somebody you are hurt deeply, then the mind doesn't want to think of that. Oh no, avoid it. Why get into this nuisance? So, without getting hurt, which means without violence, yoga must be practiced without violence. Whatever be the name you give to that yoga. There are violent practices which are also carried on under the name of yoga. Why they do it, only they know, not we. Yoga is non-violence, not only in the sense that I don't hurt you, but I am not hurt, either by myself or by you. If what I do hurts me, then it is more than likely, once again, unless I am a great hero and or a confirmed masochist, the mind will shy away from it. And there is no awareness. So, without struggling, while I continue to be active in life, action being natural to life, can I become aware of what life is, what action is? Why am I doing what I am doing? Now, this question has a different connotation to the student of yoga. Arurukshu, the student of yoga, the student who wants to climb the ladder of yoga. Why am I doing what I am doing? Immediately, the normal human mind, uneducated, untrained, unyogic human mind, says, I am doing this because I was told to do this. I was doing this because I want to please him. I am doing this because he insulted me or he praised me. The normal tendency is immediately to blame your action upon someone else. Make someone else responsible for what you are doing. Why are you doing this? Immediately the mind thinks of somebody else who is responsible for it, whether it is good or bad. And so the master warns us.
Uddhared atmana atmanam natmanam avasadet atmaiva hyatmano bandhur atmaiva rupiratmanah.
Don't blame others or glorify them for what happens to you or what you do. Look within yourself. Don't say that just because he insulted me, I hit him. Someone else uses the same words and you don't hit. I call him a fool and he gets angry. And his girlfriend slaps him and goes, "Ah, you fool." And he is delighted. So it's not me or the word. It is how he feels about it. It is exactly how he feels about it. Your actions are not really determined by others, however much you'd like to think that they are. They are determined by your reaction, something within you which reacts to a situation. That is what the yogi is interested in, the student of yoga is interested in. And when he says, "Why am I doing what I am doing?" he really and truly wants to find out what is it in me that responds to the world in this fashion. And in the case of a serious student of yoga, this goes on for 26 hours of the day. Throughout the day, there is absolutely no let up. It is when one engages oneself in such observation, unceasing observation, that the virtues that are regarded as qualifications for the student of yoga arise spontaneously, without any effort. You are angry with someone, you want to... Why am I doing this? The anger is gone. You are greedy, you want to grab something. What is this happening now? It's gone. It's like a... Have you seen bed bugs? Huh? No? Pardon? I don't know if there are other examples. The bed bug is by about the best example for this. It starts running and you look at it, it freezes. The moment you look at it, it's still, absolutely still. I don't know how it knows that you are looking at it. All the, for want of a better word, evil intentions and qualities freeze the moment you look at them. Our defects and weaknesses and evil, wickedness, they have a free play only as long as you are not aware of them. Look at them, they freeze. And for at least half an hour or 1 hour afterwards, you are saint, you are holy, holy, holy. I'm sure all of us have used this expression sometime or the other. Oh, I don't know why I did this. I don't know why I did this. If you knew why, you would not have done that. That's the idea. I was taken unawares. I don't know why I did this. The solution is simple, but it's not very easy. It is not very easy to remain aware when there is a provocation or a temptation. Just leave it here. Let's see why we are asked to meditate. For instance, if we have an argument and I insult him, naturally because of the argument and the heat generated by it, his attention has been diverted by me. He's looking at me in great, great big eyes, and the moment I say something insulting, he springs up. Which means there's a tremendous lot of emotion and heat generated in our relationship, and his attention is totally distracted. That is when he blows up. Right? The master says, okay, create another situation where this thing does not happen. Where you are not plucked away from your awareness and thrown to the winds. Create another situation. In that situation, ensure that you are the master all the time. And what is it? Japa. Repeat a mantra. You don't feel insulted, you don't feel provoked, you don't feel tempted, you don't feel threatened, nothing at all. It's a completely neutral job. You sit down and repeat your mantra. Now, remain aware of this mantra. Don't let it go. Don't let it slip from your awareness. Or don't let your awareness slip from the mantra. Is that right? Right. And you sit down with all, we'll discuss that probably tomorrow or the day after. Very easy instructions, clear instructions of how to keep the neck and the back and everything erect and all that. And you repeat the mantra, all this seems to be perfectly clear, easy. You keep repeating the mantra, it seems to be quite simple. It's obvious, you want to repeat the mantra for the next half hour. Why should I not do it? You can. Can you? You remain aware of the mantra for about 20-25 seconds. Then it's gone. Is the awareness itself gone away? No. You are aware. You are not aware of the mantra anymore. You are aware of something else. You are not, if you fall asleep, that's all right. One needn't be disappointed at all if one falls asleep during the practice of meditation. It's all right. Gone. But sitting there with full awareness and with all good intentions, serious, absolutely sincere, totally serious, I want to sit down and repeat my mantra. If you practice this with a little more curiosity instead of seriousness, you will observe something remarkable. Almost for 1/300th of a second, there is loss of awareness. Whereas the concentration of attention on the mantra was steady for 20 seconds, the distraction goes on for 20 minutes. It's nothing. It's nothing. So, this practice called meditation is not an end in itself, but it is a training necessary for the yogi in order to know what this awareness means, how to remain aware, how not to allow this awareness to slip away. Is that possible? In the heat of activity, it may be difficult to remain aware of what goes on within oneself. So he says, sit down, practice this in the morning. Let's see if you succeed in that. If you can really get hold of yourself and remain aware of the mantra, and what is most important in the practice of meditation, remain aware of the moment of distraction. How is that possible? I go on repeating the mantra, I become aware I have been distracted only 10 minutes later. How do you want me to remain? How do you want me to recognize the moment of distraction? They say, all right, I'll give you a technique, a method. These methods are meant for the discovery. The methods are of absolutely no intrinsic value in themselves. If you don't like my method, you can choose some other method. To make that possible, that is, to enable us to get hold of us, ourselves, at the moment of distraction, to become aware of the moment of distraction, there is a very beautiful exercise, technique. And it is there in one of the tantras, actually. But it has also been adopted by the Zen folk. That is, concentrate on the breath itself. And see if you can become aware of the exact moment of change when the inhalation becomes exhalation and the exhalation becomes inhalation. This is also mentioned in the Yoga Vasishtha. There we are told that moment is yourself. That is the sandhi or the junction between the inhalation and the exhalation, and the exhalation and the inhalation. There is a moment of change. There is a junction. But can you recognize the exact moment? Not approximately half an hour ago. The exact moment as it happens. When you train yourself in this fashion, you have found the key, so to say. Aha. So, even as the action is happening, I keep pursuing it. The awareness keeps company with it. How can you find that moment? By following it all the time. Following the inhalation all the time, till the change happens. And following the exhalation all the time, till the change happens. You are on the merry-go-round. And you realize you cannot slip away from that. You are on the merry-go-round. As it goes there, you are still there. As it comes back, you are still there. Now it changes. Now it changes. By training in this fashion, you have more or less because it's not as easy with something else, trained yourself to do the same thing when you repeat your mantra. Go on following the mantra, riding on the mantra, never letting it go. Then you see on the periphery of your inner vision a thought arising. It's provoking you, it's tempting you. The next moment you are going to be distracted. There you are aware. This provocation collapses. Because you can only be taken unaware, not when you are aware. And the provocation is dropped. You come back to the center. Carry on. As you come back to the center, you are aware. Carry on. And then the next provocation arises. You are aware of it in the periphery of your vision. But you are definitely following the sound of the mantra. The distraction comes closer and closer and closer. You are aware because you want to see, to observe and become aware of the moment of distraction. So that right till the moment when you could have been distracted, you are aware. And that awareness itself prevents the distraction from happening. Okay, the distraction disappears. When you have trained yourself in that fashion, then it becomes easy for you not to react. In a situation in which you would have blindly reacted before. Because the vital factor in all these is exactly the same. How to prevent loss of awareness. That's all. And this is done in activity and therefore in relationship.
not alone. You are trying out the techniques when you are alone, calling it meditation, simply because you are otherwise weak to bring about this awareness in relationship, in the daily battle of life. But that is not the whole thing. For no problem arises in meditation. You are all sitting very quietly in the morning. Nobody was insulting another. Nobody was fighting with another. There was no jealousy. There was no envy. There was no hate. Nothing at all. All quiet, fast asleep. But it is when we come into contact with others in our daily life, it is then that these problems tend to arise. And we are seeking methods or means whereby we may be able to avoid these problems from plaguing us. Arurukshor muner yogam karma karanam uchyate. So, in activity, in relationship, I am trying to remain aware of the source of action. Yoga rudasyata siva shamakkarana muchyate. When the mind is well under control, what we have been discussing so far is what is known as control of mind. It is not suppression of anything at all. You are merely observing it. That is intelligent control. When the mind is under control, yoga rudasya tasyiva shamak karanam uchyate, then you can enjoy inner peace and allow action to flow. From there on, there is no need for you to engage yourself deliberately in some sort of activity. Since you have dealt with the problem of unawareness, which gives rise to selfishness, selfishness will not exist in you. That's the idea. And from there on, all that you need do is to rest content within yourself. Life will flow through you also. You won't remain idle. But there will not even be that little effort that was necessary when he was still battling with this awareness. Battling is a bad word, but you know what I mean. When you are still trying to remain established in that awareness. What happens thereon? Does the yogi go to sleep? No. Shamak kharanam uchyate. That control of mind and senses, self-control, becomes habitual. It is not trying to control oneself. It is not struggling to control oneself, as earlier on we may have had need to do. For instance, practicing meditation, practicing pranayama, and all these struggling. I mean, these are all not struggle in the more destructive sense, but some sort of effort. Even that is not necessary now, because you are in a state of perpetual meditation. That light of awareness which has been kindled
shines brightly without any more effort, without any more fuel being supplied by way of sitting for your meditation and doing this and doing that. The mind is constantly aware, there is constant awareness. The awareness is never lost. So that even as one little motivation, wrong motivation arises, hey, down. In other words, you are never taken unawares. That is shama. Shama karanam uchyate. At that point, you are a yogi in the real sense of the term. Now you can figure out whether you will dream or whether you will think or whether you will not think. You may do, anything may happen. Anything may happen, nothing may happen. It is no longer your egoistic choice. It is no longer a selfish life. Whatever you are doing, what you are doing may appear to others to be selfish, that's not your concern. What you are doing may appear to others to be extremely altruistic, and that's not your concern. Because the self is not there. And what happens, happens. Not because you want it to happen that way, but because it happens that way. This hall can be lit up in two ways. One, the sun shines through and there is blazing light here. Two, you switch on the electric lights. Before one became a full-fledged yogi, there was need to switch on this light. Once you have become fully fledged yogi, then the whole thing is flooded by sunlight. There is no need to switch on or switch off. Yoga arudasya tasyeva shamakkar namuchyate. And this life, and the whole of your inside is so radiantly lit, brilliantly lit, that it is never lost. At that moment, at that point, it is no longer your life, it is the divine life. It is no longer your will, it is the divine will. Whatever happens from there on is God's will. You are naturally established in virtue of which you may not even be aware. Virtue not as defined by X, Y, Z, because virtue as defined by people is always very confusing. But when you are established in yoga, there is virtue in you. Virtue flows in you, which is natural, effortless, and it has its own innate nature. It doesn't depend upon human definition. As a matter of fact, only that is virtue. What you and I are practicing now in the name of virtue is a practice. Nice thing, good thing. Is an experiment, is a sort of play acting. Then, when you are established in yoga, virtue becomes natural and so beautiful. Effortless, natural and beautiful.
all that is dependent on yourself. Nobody else can do it for you. Nobody else can prevent you from doing it.
Uddhareda atmana atmanam natmana mausadiyet. Atmaiva hyatmano bandhu. Atmaiva rupuratmanaha.
Uplift yourself by yourself, says Krishna. Because you are your own friend and you are your own enemy. We do not say that we are our own saviors, but we do say that nobody else can save you. I think people who are hooked to this logic of either or find this a bit confusing. Yoga is not a philosophy, as some missionaries declare, which says you can save yourself. Doesn't say so. Uddharetatmananvanam, you can lift yourself up, not save. But yoga does say that you cannot be saved by somebody else, whoever it is. What does it mean? That is again one of the paradoxes. No one else can save me, nor can I save myself. Oh my God. Give up, and then God takes over.